Okay, let's start the show.
It's November 20th, 2014. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Smith, seated directly to my left, adjusting what appears to be his watch, is Norman Chan.
It's March. It's March November.
It's looking like March is going to be the month of smarches, though. Jeremy Williams is shaking his head and looking disgusted. How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
Let's tone that humor level down.
Hello.
5%.
Set it to 75%. Nobody knows what we're talking
55%.
About. This is a completely original reference. This is brought to you by our next week of builds.
Everyone's seen the movie.
I saw the movie.
Yeah. What'd you think?
We're talking about Interstellar.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah. No, I liked
wait.
It.
Wait. No, that's all right. I enjoyed the movie.
I thought it was an ambitious film.
Absolutely.
And largely a success.
I was able to appreciate it despite its flaws. We had a spoiler cast about it this week on Still Untitled.
I'm looking forward to it.
You should.
You haven't listened to it.
What, you released it?
Yeah, it's out.
It came out this week.
Well, I'll be damned.
2 days ago. if you haven't listened to it, I would highly encourage you to watch the movie first and then listen to it. There was a story on Wired this morning about the Interstellar IMAX release. At 2 hours, 45 minutes, and 7 seconds, it is the longest IMAX release ever.
They've extended the amount of time that you can do an IMAX reel.
Thanks, Jim Cameron.
Because previously, IMAX projectors could not run for longer than, I believe, an hour. So you had to either use two projectors or only have hour-long movies. But with movies like Avatar and
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and stuff like that, I guess they used regular projectors in the IMAX theaters.
Was it? Yeah, Crouching Tiger was they just put a 35mm projection on IMAX theater.
So, okay.
Yeah, but now there's IMAX
Dark
film.
Dark Knight.
A 70mm IMAX, which is the actual legit size of IMAX. There's IMAX 2K. There's IMAX 4K. There are like three different IMAX formats, some used for LIMAX. And then Interstellar was released in six different formats in theaters.
Wait, what?
There are six different ways you can watch IMAX. Okay. Interstellar.
Hold on, can we try?
Someone already did it.
No. I'm saying, can we guess?
Oh, you can guess.
Okay.
Absolutely.
IMAX 70mm.
Okay.
Digital 4K. Digital 4K with Atmos audio super sound.
I'm talking about actual just film.
Oh.
Just the video.
Yeah.
Different video formats.
Wow. Okay. So then I would say 35mm 4K digital and 70mm film. And that's all I got.
There were basically three IMAX and three.
Oh, because they have to have the faux IMAX too.
Yes.
None of them were 3D.
None of them were 3D, which is great.
Yes.
I think a film critic some filmmaker did an experiment and watched all six. One each day, six days in a row, in LA. Joey actually watched one of the unique prints. He watched it in 35mm film, which was shown at the New Beverly, Quentin Tarantino's theater.
Is that theater always film? Is it only film?
It's only film.
Okay.
Yes. But the moral is, regardless of which format you watch it in, it has to be projected properly. It's not just the source. If the calibration isn't right, in some theaters, even though they were showing, you know, the 70mm, they had it out of focus when they switched the reels. That can ruin the entire experience.
That goes without saying.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's one of those things that it still happens to this day.
Well, yeah, isn't that annoying? Like, I go to theaters that have trained projectionists who actually care about the film.
That's what you want. That's what you're paying for.
Yeah.
You're paying for the facility, the experience, which includes an experienced projectionist.
Yep.
So the Wired story said that when James Cameron did the Avatar re-release, the extended edition in theaters, he wanted to do 2 hours and 44 minutes and like 36 seconds or something. It's like 13 seconds shorter than this one. And they rebuilt the way the reels work. So IMAX for long IMAX, they have a spindle. When they put the film on it, it weighs 600 pounds. It has to be moved with a forklift.
Holy, it's a giant. We're talking about, when you think of a reel film, it's a reel, maybe like a foot and a half.
It's
in
like
diameter.
This.
But the IMAX one is several feet, maybe several meters actually in diameter.
And it's not several meters. It was like 3.5 feet.
And it's a single long continuous
one. There's no
piece of film.
There's but no switch over.
They
no.
Do, one movie goes.
This is one movie
that?
On okay. the whole reel.
Is it, and it's
said.
Shipped that way?
No, no, no. They ship it in a bunch of different canisters, and then I assume the theater assembles it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when I saw Interstellar in IMAX, there was a bug on the window directly in front of the lens. I presume he was getting fried because he would be there for a minute and then he'd slide down a little bit and then he'd go back up and then he'd slide down and then finally he flew away.
Wow.
But he looked about 2 feet tall on the screen. It was kind of funny. People were laughing at an otherwise very serious moment.
There was a lot of laughter in my showing too, but it was because of some of the cameo appearances from some celebrities deep in the film.
Mm. Which really, that's another thing that you have no control over, the audience that you watch it with.
That's right.
And some audiences, the tension will build to a point, and you know the filmmaker can try to compensate for that, but. You know, some people don't like serious moments.
Well, there was
laughable dialogue.
There was some really laugh. Like I was sitting next to a couple of what I assume were physicists who were laughing at the at some of the like third act reveals.
Yeah,
like actually like guffawing. So it was pretty funny.
Guffawing. Yeah, that's appropriate. Do you know what the very first DCP was?
What's a DCP?
That's the digital cinema package. The first movie that was delivered.
Who knows that?
In cartridges form. It's a digital format. Like basically the
whole. Wait, was the Phantom Menace?
No.
Oh, that's really? Good guess though.
Justin Bieber's movie. It's in the.
What's the name of Bieber's movie, Norm?
God. Believe or something.
You have Believe, I believe, is the name of the movie. God.
You have raised the level of this dialogue, Norm.
But the reason that Never Say Never, I believe, is the movie in 2001.
Never Say Never.
Oh, he did have a movie called Believe. I'm not proud of that at all. That was 2013.
They really missed an opportunity by not calling it Believe.
By Believe, I believe his first movie, the one released in 2001, was the first movie distributed solely on the DCP package.
So is that like essentially Blu-ray hard drive? It's like a format.
It's
four movie theater projectors.
It's a format that digital projectors can read. It looks like a cartridge. And the reason I know this is because it is now archived at the Virginia, that big the archival facility in Virginia.
The one that the archive runs?
No, this is the national one, the Library of Congress owns. There's a name for it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like their deep storage for artifacts of importance, right?
It is called... I think it's the National Audiovisual Conservation Center at the Library of Congress.
That seems right.
Culpeper. Yes.
Oh.
Culpeper.
I've been there. Not to the place, but I've driven through Culpeper. There was a Civil War battle there.
Culpeper is the Library of Congress's new massive facility for AV archiving, and they have there every single piece of copyrighted media.
That's right by my parents' house. I should go visit next time I'm out there.
Every single piece of copyrighted media.
Man, there's a lot of bad stuff in there.
A physical copy?
Or digital copy.
Or digital
copy.
Right.
Yeah, but they have copy. To digitize.
Yeah. That's work.
So do you think they're getting in like old like 20s era records and then digitizing them and then smashing them and throwing them away?
No. They restore if they can, but they have, you know, $10,000 record readers for perfectly perfect balance.
Wow. Okay.
It's one of those places when everything goes sour and the world comes to an end. That's one of the when they show like,
well, that's on Alcatraz where they save all the books.
Yeah, that was in one movie. But like when they show like, you know, things being stored and bunkers being closed.
Yeah,
that's one of the places.
Like Dolly Madison running out of the White House with the portrait of George Washington.
Yes, right.
It's a famous story, and I don't think that one actually happened.
Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
The Constitution.
The Day After Tomorrow. Right.
World War Z definitely had the big glass
that
case.
Brad Pitt film.
Yeah,
never saw it.
That movie was much better than it should have been.
Mm.
Let's talk about tech news. A bunch of stuff has happened. The WatchKit SDK was released, and along with that, a whole bunch of info about Apple's Smarch.
Yeah.
You were really excited about this yesterday, Jeremy.
I know. When we were going to podcast yesterday.
Then we ended up playing iDarb all afternoon.
It's been a whole day now.
Yeah. Are you still enthusiastic? Has a night of sleep dropped your interest in this, or are you still so stoked?
No, I thought it was. I think it's interesting. I'm a little surprised that both watches don't have an identical resolution. I knew that they were different sizes, but I thought they would have identical resolutions with different pixel densities.
So there's a couple of big things here. and they're calling them both retina screens, but the small watch is 340 by 272. The big watch is 390 by 312. It's funny because these are kind of close to what the original iPhone resolution was.
Did you pull those numbers out of your head?
They're on the show notes.
They're put on the show notes.
Nicely done, nicely done.
Prepared.
I don't have show notes.
You should bring them up.
You're on the document.
And that's comp resolution to...
Or density.
To other smartwatches right now. The Android smartwatches are on the high end 320 by 320. And I believe the LG G Watch, when that was first launched, that was lower resolution.
I don't know what the Pebble... The Pebble's because they use a different display technology.
That's not fair.
The pixel fill is completely different.
Yeah. Okay, so we know resolution. We know there's going to be two screen sizes. There'd be different resolution.
Yeah, but they're handling the way that you write to the screen differently. Like with the phones, it's you write to a point.
You say put this on pixel number this by
no,
this.
Not pixel number, point base.
Okay,
and that gets scaled to pixels.
Yeah,
there's a conversion factor.
But with the watches, it sounds like it's more like you're going to start in the upper left hand corner, and you're going to start writing just as you would on a web page. And so it sounds to me like developers are going to have to really account for two screens in a more, include both assets for different screen resolutions. Things might look a little strange on one phone on one watch when they look a little better on the other.
Or they can scale them differently, right?
I suppose, but when you're talking about scaling at that res, it's going to look a little wonky if it doesn't.
I guess that's true.
It might sort of, you're going to want unique assets. Anyway,
I thought the interesting thing to note was that it's going to be kind of a gradual rollout of functionality for the watch.
Yeah. So it doesn't process much. It's more of a screen that relays info from your phone.
Yeah, it's a display, but not in the remote desktop sense of display where you're sending, hey, here's what you should actually draw. It's more that the phone will do the heavy lifting and then send draw this, this, and this versus here's what the pixels look like. Put them on your screen. I saw a hysterical Business Insider piece yesterday that I didn't even retweet because it was so bad. But they were like, I don't think this is going to work with anything but the iPhone.
Give him a cigar.
Yeah, nice job, guys.
So I guess you can cache up to 20 megabytes of info that can be...
That's it?
Well, that's a lot at that resolution.
Like, if you're talking about,
Most of that's going to be assets, graphic assets.
I mean, it'll be the still screen, right?
Well, yeah, but that's not going to take that much. I think you can certainly do basically like animated GIFs for animations, but there's no video allowed. It's just a series of images. I think 20 megabytes sounds like a lot, but the point is that will be local on the phone, on the watch, so it won't have to stream that kind of information.
And that's 20 megs per application or 20 megs total?
Per app.
Per application. And then you can do a lot of vector rendering stuff with 20 megs. Like you could.
Yeah, well, 20 megs in vectors is almost infinite.
Yeah.
The thing is, I didn't understand. I misunderstood that. I thought it was 20 megs total. I was like, that doesn't sound like very much at all. But 20 megs per app is reasonable. Because that means if they have a gig of storage in that thing, then it's basically infinite apps.
And that doesn't include sound?
I don't know what the situation with sound is.
I imagine sound is something.
It's probably going to be sound too.
Sound probably would take the most because you can't. That's the most noticeable.
Yeah.
Hold on. Are you going to use sound? Are you going to be able to play sound from the watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How?
It has
that speaker in the back, the vibration tonger thing.
Well, no, they said that. Oh, you know what? Maybe it doesn't have a speaker.
I thought you could use it as a Bluetooth.
That's what it was. Yeah, it will have Bluetooth for headset compatibility, but it might not have a speaker.
So then, presumably, you'd be able to put RDO or Beats or Spotify or something on it, and just stream direct.
I would expect that you guys of all people would know this.
I don't want to hear that from you.
Apple Watch speaker.
Just hop off the bandwagon. You can get back on next year.
I don't have any device that can work with this.
So do you know all the ways you'll be able to interact with it?
I think you can touch it.
Yeah, couple ways.
And you can turn the knob?
Well, one, like if you just glance at it, it'll give you immediate information. If you hold your hand there for a period of time longer than a moment, they're unspecific about exactly how long. But if you hold your hand up maybe a second or two, it will go automatically to an extended view with a more detailed view.
So it's like a touch and hold, except it's a lift
for the same app.
Yeah, so this is like the thing that app developers will have to embrace.
Long press.
Yeah, like watch and long watch. Look and long look. And then...
glance and long glance.
That's probably what it's called. There is actual terminology.
And I assume that the one of those is a lower power. Like the glance is a lower power, and it kind of spools up when you do the long glance to do something cool, right?
I don't know.
I mean, the interesting stuff from this is all their usability predictions.
It does have a built-in speaker.
Right.
Oh, it does have a built-in
speaker. You can use Dick Tracy.
Oh, right.
All the usability, all the ways that they expect people to use this, like and the way they expect people to interact with wearables on their wrist, from their testing and from their prescience, is currently in the WatchKit so far.
And then you'll be able to
I bet they're holding some stuff back.
Sure, WatchKit will develop. We'll iterate over time.
Then you'll be able to tap on. There's like a you can have up to four things that the user can actually interact with, and you can tap on those for more info. You can scroll.
So that would be like quadrants of the screen, presumably.
Right, I would think so.
Okay,
and then you can scroll vertically. You can press and push like a force touch, like you press
the hard press
a little bit harder.
Yeah.
And that will bring up a context menu
because it's pressure sensitive.
Yeah.
And then you also have the crown control, right? Or is the crown just for UI stuff, OS level stuff?
I don't know. I think the crown is like basically a scroll.
And also a button.
Which I think the crown scrolls faster than you can scroll with your finger. That makes sense. And then you can do the...
No. It's not that. They don't want you to spin the crown. The idea is that it's tuned. It's analog or
it has acceleration or whatever.
Not actual analog. But it's not acceleration, though. It's as if... when you spin like one full, they know how far you can spin, and that should be a lot of zooming out
range.
And in.
Okay.
But then on top of this, they're doing this off-screen swipe. So you can swipe to go between information within apps. But then if you do like an off-screen swipe, where you start off the screen and then you move on and then swipe across, that's a forward and back.
So it works like the back motion on the iPhone and iPad
currently. Yeah. So there's a lot of ways to interact with the phone. I almost wonder,
the watch.
At first I wondered, maybe that's too many because a lot of people, this is sort of a new device. People need to be eased into it just like they were eased into the iPhone because they added a lot of these ways to interact with the iPhone screen as time went by.
And a lot of people still don't use them. A lot of people don't use four-finger swipe on iPads.
But then, they added tips for a reason, right?
But then I realize every user of the iWatch is going to have an iPhone, and they're maybe used to these conventions.
I feel like a lot of people are going to buy the iWatch who are maybe not power users of the iPhone, and they're going to be confused.
That's possible.
But as long as it has a basic functionality.
That's the thing. There'll be basic stuff, and there'll be advanced stuff for the grognards, and it'll kind of work itself out. I think with the phone, they had a pretty good idea because there was a clear analog with, if we want to make this a browser, that fits in your pocket, here's how we think people will use that. They'll want to use their fingers to scroll up and down. They'll pinch to zoom. And they rolled out two or three really basic gestures that my father could understand easily. With this, I think they don't really know. I think that what we see in this first SDK and what we see in the third version of the SDK 2 years from now are going to be very, very different from each other.
Well, you pointed out they've already announced late next year.
Yeah. Native apps.
Native apps.
So at launch, everything's going to run on the phone, and it sounds to me almost like it will be like a secondary display for your phone apps that runs on the device. Presumably, by the end of next year, you'll be able to load actual apps onto the phone. But my guess is that they need iOS 9 to have a mechanism to do that in the iOS UI without tacking it on.
The wrapping up is just accelerated pace of iPhone development. Just like iPhone OS and iOS were very different things.
I mean, iOS wasn't feature complete until, version 5, probably, when they added...
It iOS.
Well, right.
Remember, iPhone OS...
But I'm just saying, it wasn't feature complete until they got notifications.
And developers were fine with that.
All that stuff. Well, users eventually got testy. So anyway, it seemed pretty interesting stuff. If you want to look at that, there's been a lot written about it. A lot of it's been very smart, but much of it has been dumb. I think, as usual, Gruber has a pretty good analysis on what actually matters there. Anything else? Anything you feel? I feel like we've covered this pretty well.
I think it's pretty good. I'm going to buy one.
$350?
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'm going
to
buy one.
But the thing that you were saying to me yesterday was that originally you thought you were going to get the small one because of the way you thought the visual differences on the screen, there would be parity because of the point.
I thought it would be like an iPad Air and an iPad Mini right now. You know, same res, different pixel density.
But...
Yeah, I know. Now I don't know.
Now you don't know.
Now, and the real concern is pre-ordering. You know, I like to get these things as early as possible. I have that addiction.
And it's a problem.
I'm probably not going to be able to see these screens before I can actually buy one.
I'm sure there will be a...
Day one. So, pre-order. So, there's going to be a problem. But just in terms of like...
You just pre-order both.
Physical.
Cover your bases.
Hey, now you're thinking.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be high resale value.
In terms of physical size, I'll probably do the 3D print thing again. Because that worked out well for the iPhone.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that.
How big and chunky it is.
Yeah.
If they announce the release date and, you know, pre-orders are, let's say, a week away, usually when they announce, like, pre-orders are next week, right? And there's no 3D printed model on Thingiverse, would you model one or would you commission one to be modeled?
Commission one? I don't think I'd commission one.
We can get someone to do it.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, someone will do that between...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's probably one there already. As soon as they post actual specs.
Dimensions of the physical device. I think choose the one that ergonomically fits your wrist.
Are you happy with this size?
Yes, very happy. Right. So we'll talk about this and what we're testing.
Right. So I still think that the watch that they... So the other interesting thing to me about the display stuff that came out of this is that to me signals that this is going to be a much more stable platform than iOS has been to date.
Why?
Because it seems like their primary mode is use the app on the phone and let this be a secondary way to interface with that.
Yeah.
Since that's what they're coming out with first. That to me says... Yes, we don't think that this is going to be an every year upgrade or every 2 years upgrade. We think this is going to be something you buy and hold on to for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, currently in Apple terms, something you hold on to for a while is like maybe 6 years for a laptop.
No.
I mean, you and I don't, but
I think most people 4 years for a laptop is the stretch.
No, I don't think so, Norm.
I think you're absolutely incorrect.
These days it seems like
a 5 year upgrade.
Wow.
Think about it. If you're just using internet and web browsing and paying your taxes, what do you need a new... Your first-gen MacBook Air, second-gen MacBook Air is fine.
Here's my basis for that. I think the large number of people buying MacBooks right now are college students. And I think people buy a MacBook when they get into college, and they buy a MacBook when they get out of college. And that's 4 years.
However, let me just point out that in the case of laptops and phones, the first few iterations over the first few years, there's always the most noticeable size improvements and weight improvements. That's going to happen with the watch.
Yeah.
So that's going to encourage a lot of people to upgrade.
The MacBook in 2010, 4 years ago, was no longer sold.
But 2010, 4 years ago, is very different than what's shipping today. I mean, 2010, 4 years ago, we weren't shipping with 2 gig machines.
And I will say that the battery is such that 4 years, the batteries are
well,
crap.
But the battery is a $100 replacement.
I think that people will change the battery.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't, I don't think you can have a laptop for 4 years and not do anything to it and they'll still be usable.
Well, but a lot of people just sit with their laptop plugged in all the time.
That's not good. That's not good for
you. No, I'm just saying they don't ever need it to be not on battery.
Is that really not good for it?
It's not good for
it. It's got circuitry in there to control whether that's
a laptop is, you know, you just need to use it. You need to have charge cycles on the battery constantly.
Yes. And that's
not that leaving it plugged in all the time is the problem. It's that, like, just putting it in a drawer and not using it for 3 months and letting it drain all the way is the problem.
No, but I do think that if you leave it plugged in all the time and you only use it plugged in, have that battery at 100%, that is bad for the battery.
Okay.
Some laptops now come with, they'll let you,
Well, like Lenovo's will do a charge cycle. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you, though, Jeremy. I think that we'll see dramatic changes in the industrial design of this device over the first 2 years.
Touch.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking about MacBooks. Touch this year.
Can we talk about Sapphire? So the Wall Street Journal had a huge article yesterday about the failing of the Sapphire. Why the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus don't have Sapphire screens, basically.
Well, yeah.
It was behind the paywall. So I only read the first two paragraphs.
So what's this? The company is GStat? Or is
GM something. G Systems. I'm just going to type Sapphire Glass into Google.
Oh, boy.
But the upshot is they entered the deal with Apple not knowing if they could actually produce enough Sapphire to fulfill the deal terms of the deal, thinking that this is the make or break thing for the company is what it kind of sounds like. And that when the world's largest phone manufacturer comes calling, that's not Samsung, then you say, yes, we will do what we can. And they had known yield problems, especially getting large pieces of Sapphire. They were making 500 or 600 pounds at a time with no success or very little yield success. GT Advance is the name of the company.
GT Advanced Technologies.
And they had something like 500 forges or something like that in Mesa, Arizona, that they had bought with the Advance from Apple.
Yeah.
The whole thing went to pieces. It seems like, I mean, Apple is notorious for being hard on its supply chain. These people seem like they didn't know what they got into, although that is probably, if I was in a failed business relationship with Apple that imploded spectacularly in the public, I would probably act like I was taken advantage of by the big company too. But it's unfortunate. And I think Apple now owns the forges and a lot of the stuff there. So
I think they always did, and they were leasing them back to the company.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Apple included a $50 million fee or fine if any information was leaked, which mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I don't think it did, but
I think it's in court now.
It's unfortunate. I guess the iPhones may have been, the iPhone 6s were possibly slated to have sapphire glass.
Do you think it was going to be a difference between 6 and 6 Plus? Like only the 6 Plus would have sapphire?
I think only the 6 would have it if one of them did, but not the other.
What? That would be the toughest choice.
Just for the size.
Yeah, think about the amount of glass.
I understand from a yield standpoint, but like from a consumer standpoint, you can choose ostensibly the better, higher mm-hmm. resolution screen one that costs more, or the smaller one that's right now selling, from all reports, selling better, a lot better, three times as much as the big one, but get a better screen. That's crazy. There were the leaked, the
pictures,
supposedly leaked actual front pieces that got on YouTube. People had, you know, the
Sapphire for the iPhone 6.
Sapphire for the iPhone 6, huh. the you know, 4.7-inch yeah. sapphire front panel that was very scratch-resistant. Sapphire composite screen, I should say. Next year. Maybe next year. I think the bottom line is that regardless of whether Sapphire came out this year, the iPhone 6 is selling real well, and people are, you know, yep. it's doing well for Apple, so maybe it didn't matter.
It seems like it's about a 1-3 split of 6 to 6 Plus.
Yes, 1-3.
According to web analytics and some stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Three times as much.
Although I wonder if that's not
supply
exacerbated.
Issue.
Well, and also I tend to browse the web much more on my 6 Plus than I ever would have on the 5S, just because the screen's bigger.
So you think the difference is even more?
I wonder if the difference could be greater.
No, I think people browse.
You think the same people browse the web?
Is this just our analytics, or is this?
I've looked at our analytics. That's what our analytics indicate. Gruber posted how to look at your analytics and see, and everybody's been posting about the same ratios.
Same ratio.
There's pictures on the NextWeb article that I think they pulled either from a court filing or from the Wall Street Journal story about the sapphire glass that shows the failed boules. The sapphire crystal has grown over a period of about a month. And the final result is a 578-pound cylinder of sapphire. And they shows the 6 different ways they've cracked, to the point that most of those they weren't able to get a single sheet of sapphire out of. Imagine something that's 578 pounds and about as big around as your hands held up in a circle, your arms held up in a circle, that was shattered so spectacularly that you can't get a 5.7-inch diagonal piece of glass out of it.
Each one costs tens of thousands of dollars to grow.
Yeah, and takes a month in one of the 500 forges.
You're growing the glass.
So Apple bankrolled GT $500 million in change, and it purchased the factory and the stuff required for the construction.
Yeah, and they received a very small percentage of what they ordered.
Yes. So, which I presume went on the sensors and the camera covers. Also on the glass front, Gorilla has announced Gorilla Glass 4 this week, which supposedly is more shatter and crack resistant, which are the problems
than Gorilla Glass 3.
Than current Gorilla Glass, yeah.
Awesome.
So that is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
And welcome. Beats, this is the last piece of Apple news, I think. Yep, it's the last piece of Apple news. Beats Music's going to be integrated in iOS next year. It's more stuff to put in my Apple crap folder.
What does that mean, integrated?
It means that when you download an update, it'll be on your phone. You won't be able to delete it.
Is that right? Because a lot of their apps, you know, you still have to download.
Well, not lately. Like, if you look at it, podcasts and I think iBooks are both integrated in mm-hmm. iOS 8 now. So there's no downloading either of those. And also, as a result, there's no deleting either of those.
I wondered if it was integrated like Twitter and Facebook and Siri. So that you could...
So there's like an OS level?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I would like that just for the Siri integration in the car. so I could tell her to play something.
I would love Siri integration for my whatever music player you're using. That would be magical.
Yeah.
And should be a thing that they do.
Well, it works with the iTunes app, you know, if you use that.
Like, okay, so fair enough. Siri integration in the car would be worth me switching my audio subscription to Beats. Probably.
That was my thinking. That's I don't think that would be
exclusive to Beats.
Oh, yes, it would. Yes, it would.
How long do you think
Siri in the car won't let you do anything with
well, right now, Siri in the car doesn't let you do anything but the music app.
No, Siri does not work with third-party apps.
Oh, boy.
Does Google Now?
Google Now.
Can you play Spotify songs with Google Now?
No, but I can do it on my watch.
Well, I can do that on my watch, too.
You can do it on your watch.
Yeah.
We're talking about talking. Talking while you're in the car.
Okay, computer.
Hands on the wheel.
Computer. I thought this was a neat story. Trusted, it kind of snuck out this week. Trusted places in Android means it's a new feature. And it's unclear to me whether this is a Lollipop feature or just something that rolled out to Google Play recently. But it means that you set a geofence for your house and your office, and no longer do you have to type in a passcode at trusted places. Now, I don't think that works for people with kids, because right now the lock screen is the only thing that prevents my daughter from sending emails that have a subject line. But it seems like a nice feature,
I guess.
Is it Lollipop norm, or is it Lollipop? It's Lollipop. Okay. So you have to have a Lollipop phone, which means the handful of devices that are out now. So
many, many people are getting it.
I wish they'd push it out for Nexus 7. I don't want to do the manual install.
You gotta wait a little bit for that.
Nexus 7 1 or 2?
2. I want to see this new design.
It looks nice. I like it. I like it a lot more on the Android devices that I've seen than I do on the iOS version of that on iOS devices. Like the Maps update, I don't like it at all.
Okay.
I don't think it looks very good. Fire TV Stick starts shipping today.
Should be getting ours soon.
Yeah, mine. I ordered 2 days after you did, and mine is coming in like December 30th or something. So
if you order now, you'll get it in January.
They sold a shitload of those. And are they still $30? $20?
The promotion was only for a couple days.
Okay. There's a lot of Uber kerfluffle happening right now.
Oh, you were very upset about this. I don't know anything about this.
Okay,
educate me.
You've done well insulating yourself.
Well, no,
this was all over. Like,
if you don't follow tech press people on Twitter, you're never going to know.
All things considered,
it was on the New York Times.
Everything, everyone. So, a few months ago, there was a private dinner event. Where an executive from Uber, I believe a general manager of
an
their New
off
York
the
office,
record dinner event,
sure, where and several other celebrities and luminaries were there, and they invited some select journalists, and one of the journalists, I don't forget which newspaper he worked for, invited their friend, a BuzzFeed editor.
Mm-hmm.
Who attended. The BuzzFeed editor was not informed by anyone, the person who invited them or the event organizers, that this would be an off-the-record event. But what was said at the event is very controversial. The Uber has not had the best reputation of late, and there have been instances where, for example, the Lyft spout they've had, right? The stuff them hiring Lyft drivers and then canceling rides and doing these shady tactics. So people who've reported on this include Pando Daily's Sarah Lacey.
She's been an outspoken critic of
Uber. Yes.
Because, I mean, and just to be clear, Uber, especially over the last 6 months, has, despite being the incumbent in this kind of new ride-sharing space, has behaved like the underdog in a way that is kind of gross.
Not even the underdog, it's behaved gross, purely.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're valued at a lot of money right now. They're valued at $18 billion,
yeah.
Which is insane. And they are transforming transportation. I mean, ride-sharing services in general. So Sarah Lacey wrote a story about how, like, she thinks Uber is misogynistic because they ran ads in France, you know, touting the, you know, female, scantily clad female drivers. And had, I think, I'm not sure, had Uber had actually worked with, like, escort services or something, or had some partnership or something. Like that, I'm not exactly sure, but this executive at this dinner said that pitched the idea Didn't say he was going to do it, but pitch I did saying that they could spend millions of dollars hiring investigative journalists and private investigators using their data to fish out details about journalists who are critical of Uber.
So,
which is a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, hold on. And it's not even that it's about journalists. It's that they're threatening to fish Uber data out for anybody.
Anybody.
Because, I mean, the thing is, Uber knows where you live. Uber knows where you. If you use Uber regularly, they know where you work, where you live. They know when you're home, when you're not home.
Information about you,
right?
About not just you, but about everyone kind of connected to you because you tie Uber to other services as well. And Uber at other events have shown that have been kind of they have been shy about showing that they can track people's data in real time. Like at some other events, they spotlight, oh, this person's going here. Watch them go. Watch how we can track them. And apparently they have
which a also program, is gross.
Which is, without consent. And they have a program in-house. Some people say, some of the reports say that anyone can tap into who works at the company that can track user data, like a GodView program. Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, just to be clear, like Google had something similar to that for years where you could walk in
Facebook
and see anonymized searches and like a big giant map on a huge screen with pop-ups showing what people are searching for in different places around the world.
But not tied to users.
It was all anonymous.
Right, right. And Facebook had the same kind of privacy concerns when it was found that anyone, like the administrators, could tap anyone's account and track who was viewing whose profile and basically check on, ex-girlfriends and ex-boyfriends.
All stuff that is not appropriate.
So it all comes down to privacy concerns, right?
Absolutely. And also this...
Well, and there's a vindictive thing happening, right, too, that's real shady.
They're posing it as a suggestion. It was like a suggestion of a possibility, it really seemed like a threat.
Acted like it was a joke, is how they tried to play it off. When the BuzzFeed reporter clearly did not feel like this was presented in a way that was meant to be a joke.
Right. And so everything's, the CEO definitely condemned those statements.
Didn't fire the guy.
Did not fire the guy. The guy, has kind of, he's backed away saying that he doesn't believe that, he's towing the company.
He's doing
a lot of PR. Yeah. Trying to salvage, the situation. And then Ashton Kutcher, A+K.
The Cooch.
Came to Uber's defense yesterday.
He also is
an investor in Uber and Airbnb. I guess he got the
Airbnb is fine. Don't bring them into this.
But
they're okay.
He came to Uber's defense saying, "What's wrong with investigating shady journalists?" And he obviously comes from it from a position of one, ignorance, and two, from a being a person who has had his privacy violated as a public figure.
I mean, I have to say, as the devil's advocate, like.
But
he's kind of a dumbass.
It was a moronic thing to say.
I mean, dude, where's my car? Right? I mean, he has a...
He should be more savvy as a business person.
I don't think that that's true. He played Kelso for like 10 years on...
I think you're giving him too little credit, and I think that's a... Just because...
I'm not giving him a pass. He's still an idiot.
I think it was more absolutely moronic.
Do you blame the lion for eating the zebra? No. Oh my God. You blame the dumbass for saying something stupid? No.
Yes, I do blame the dumbass. Yeah. You should know better.
We shouldn't look to actors and people on TV for guidance as to what we should believe or think. We shouldn't expect him to have a good fucking take on this.
Well, the idea is that he's also an investor in companies and people have sponsored him.
Well.
And he is a spokesperson for tech companies. So
didn't he work for Lenovo for a while?
He's currently still.
He's the director of innovation?
They
should cut him the fuck loose.
Yeah, so I think, he should watch what he say and then not say moronic things.
It took 45 minutes from the time he made the initial tweet, three additional tweets, and then he apologized.
Defending, like pushing the issue.
I'm totally telling you, the whole swing was 45 minutes before his publicist called. It was like, hey, you have to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's slow on the publicist part.
So I'm not using Uber anymore. I guess I'm going to start taking pink mustache rides.
Hold on. They haven't done anything wrong. I mean, the thing where they're calling Lyft up may be suspect, but that's the worst you've said they've actually done.
The threatening to do it is just as bad as doing it.
No, I don't.
If they have so little, like, if one of their...
Privately. I mean, you have to imagine in any company there's going to be CEOs having... discussions and have making jokes that you would disagree with and so find abhorrent.
Here's the thing. When people get all pissed off about somebody picks up the phone and calls the tech support line and gets the poor bastard in Colorado that's getting 10 bucks an hour to get it yelled at professionally, and that person says something dumb, I hate those stories because those people are the least knowledgeable about corporate policy on the front lines, and they're the most likely to say something that's going to get everybody pissed off.
Yep.
Right? Those stories shouldn't exist. When a C-level executive of a company that's worth $18 billion says something that spectacularly dumb in a room with reporters in it, fuck them.
There's a culture
problem. They're
done.
Yeah. And they don't fire him. He should have been out the door. He should have not come to work the next day.
Yeah.
Well, that may be.
Yeah. I mean, you are done.
That's an internal politics thing.
I mean, he's a founder. He's their problem. They got to get rid of the culture that's created this, that makes this acceptable.
I don't know if I would stop using them as a user. Are you stopping because you're concerned that your privacy will be violated?
No, I don't want to give them any more of my money.
I see.
And they treat their drivers like shit. They've taken the so I talked to a guy who's now a Lyft driver that was an Uber driver the other day.
Oh, really? He switched.
And he said that they've taken the cut has increased twice in the last year. So the percentage of the fare that goes from him to Uber has gone from, I think, 28% or 30% to 35%. And he's like, he said that the only way you can get those, you know, they're a company that has a history of trotting out the success stories. Look, here's a guy who's driving his car making $100,000 a year. That guy worked 85 hours a week. Right.
About UberX?
I'm talking about Uber and UberX. Yeah. Like the UberX stuff is insane. The prices that they're setting for UberX are so spectacularly low that there's no way it's sustainable. So they're just trying to do the thing where they drive the prices down long enough to fuck over the cab drivers and everyone else while they, you know, ride on their valuation until there's no competition. I'm not going to it's okay to be scrappy and go after the competition when you're the little guy and you're fighting a big incumbent. And in this case, just to be clear, they are fighting a big incumbent. Like, the big incumbent is the cab drivers.
Yeah.
But they should be going after the fucking cab drivers, not the dinky little Lyfts and the other rideshare. The Lyft is dinky, sorry. But
Lyft, I will switch over to you if you get rid of the mustaches and not require me to sit in the front seat or do fist bumps.
I saw a small mustache in the car yesterday.
I'll pay an extra $5 on a ride if there's no human interaction required.
No sitting in the front seat, no fist bump, no mustache.
You don't want the mustache? I think the mustache rides are funny. I'm okay with the mustache.
I've never ridden Lyft. You have to sit in the front seat.
You don't have to.
They suggest that you do for camaraderie.
No good. No. Now the people who drive Uber.
Yeah.
Are they driving voluntarily?
You think? Are you suggesting that they might be slaves?
I'm asking you. Jesus Christ. I'm asking you if they're driving voluntarily, and if so, do you think maybe they would like you to call them and use them? I don't think that they necessarily need your sympathy. Is my point. My point is, if
30% of my dollars went to fascists, I wouldn't give that company my dollars either. I don't buy shit from Nestle because I disagree with a lot of the shit that they do.
But you're worried about the percentage going to the driver. You think it should be higher.
I think that they don't treat their drivers well.
Okay, but the people who are driving for them, they need the money.
That's true.
So help them out.
Well, so do the people driving Lyfts.
They're going to give you free water.
And those guys need fist bumps. Fist bumps are way cheaper than money, Jeremy.
I feel like there's more Uber, though. Aren't there more drivers out there? Isn't it easier to catch an Uber?
I see a lot of those pink mustaches.
I've never used Lyft.
You should try it. You might like it. Maybe you'll make a new friend.
I don't
want that guy that. I talked to the other day was really nice. He was very friendly. We talked about cars. We have the same car. We had an extended conversation.
Let me know if there's a reason to really stop using Uber.
I want their. I want to see a future where their culture changed or positive reports come out of the company. Plenty of great people work at that company.
Oh, absolutely. And it sucks for them. They should be trying to get the fuck out if they work there now. That would be my number one move recommendation. If you work at Uber and they don't fix this culture problem, you should leave.
Well, they did hire, you know, they're doing internal reviews. They hired external people, new people to come in to do internal reviews, ex-IBM privacy officers and stuff like that. And Senator Al Franken gave him a good talking to.
Really?
Yes.
On the Hill, like in a committee hearing? Hill.
Well, okay.
Did you tell them that they were good enough and strong enough and gosh darn it, people like them? Yeah. Okay. Completely wide swing here.
This segue brought to you by
Segway.com. You can get a gyroscopic vehicle and you can play a 3DS on it.
Why?
And if you wanted to have homebrew, put homebrew on your 3DS.
Can I do that?
Do that now. All you need, it's really easy to find, is a copy of a Ubisoft game from, I think, last year or the year before called Cubic Ninja, which somebody has figured out an exploit that will allow you to root the to run unsigned code
a week ago this
on the 3DS.
Cost $3 to $7 on eBay.
Yeah.
Now it costs minimum $40.
What?
So, Norm, if you want to make a bunch of money fast, all you have to do is root a previously unrooted device. Then, before you tell anybody how you do it, you buy up all the copies of the game and then trickle them out on eBay at such a slow pace that they'll sell for $40 or $50 a piece.
Sounds great.
It's a good move. I presume that this also opens the door for massive 3DS piracy if that didn't already exist.
I don't have 3DS.
I'm surprised it took so long.
The 3DS is an old system.
Yeah.
For if this is the first time somebody's gotten it to the point they can run unsigned code.
So what can you do?
You can develop homebrew applications for it that don't have to be signed by Nintendo to run.
Run emulators.
Yeah.
Is there an ecosystem of these applications?
No, not yet.
Well,
it just happened.
I wonder how hard it is to port the stuff over from the other Nintendo devices.
Well, it has backwards compatibility for the 3DS and hardware, or the DS and hardware, yeah. So presumably all that stuff will just run. I don't know. The details, all the stories I read were just like, hey, Cubic Ninja is now really expensive. So if you wanted to play that, you're probably boned. I think it's only the Japanese release. The North American one doesn't work.
Really?
The digital download doesn't do it either. So you have to have to get the most rare of rare Cubic Ninjas.
You know, there's a new DS, the 3DS out in Japan this holiday season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you see it?
No, I want to, though. Have you seen it?
It has the Famicom buttons in Japan.
You've seen it?
Well, there's pictures of it.
Oh, I thought you meant you've held it.
No. Wes has held it. Has he?
He was just in Japan.
It's supposed to have a nice wider...
It has a better field of view.
Comfort zone.
Yeah.
Like for 3D.
Better field of view, better battery life. And it has a Lenovo-style eraser nub
on the
for
right
the right
side.
Stick. Presumably so you can play Monster Hunter and stuff like that. I don't know. Also, in Japan... It has Famicom color buttons. So they're red, blue, yellow, and green, not gray, 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 gray.
That's nice.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool. Famicom stands for?
Family console.
Family computer.
Oh. Mark Farid wants to live another person's life for an entire month. How is he going to do that, Norm?
Who's Mark Farid?
Mark Farid is an artist, seemingly of the performance type.
Hmm.
He is going to put on a pair of virtual reality goggles, live in a tiny room, and he's going to strap a camera on presumably somebody he knows pretty well, and they're going to wear that camera 24 hours a day for a month.
That seems like an awful lot of time to live in a room that presumably has a bathroom and food.
Composting toilet?
I mean, not to mention wear goggles.
And wear goggles.
Yeah, the goggles are the thing I was thinking.
What virtual reality system are they using?
I assume Oculus, but they didn't say. They weren't specific.
Have you guys at this point seen the South Park virtual reality episode?
No.
Episode? It was funny.
It was trippy.
It wasn't about VR. It was
surreal.
Of a tech support gag.
There was a great tech support gag, and after the episode aired, Oculus, all their tech support changed their names. They answered the phone to Steve for a day.
That's funny.
Which is really funny.
That is funny.
In the loop. But here we call it a Vin the Loop. That was my favorite joke. Actually, my favorite joke was Cartman doing the magic tricks.
It seems like the South Park guys are basically just like looking at The Verge and picking a story and then making an episode about that every week. It's very topical, more so than normal. It's like topical to this is only a test, not topical to
the pop culture,
like normal
large
people. Yeah.
I mean, they did a quadcopter episode, a virtual reality episode, and yesterday's episode was about magic cards.
They did free-to-play apps.
They did freemium apps.
Which now, by the way, on the Apple Store are labeled get instead of free.
Why'd they do that?
Because the EU was suing them for deceptive practices. Because you can't say, hey, this is free, and then charge people thousands of dollars inside them.
Really?
So what do they call it?
Get. When you go, and it's not, the thing that's horseshit about this is at least right now.
So if it doesn't contain in-app purchases, it
still says get.
Ah.
Yeah.
Like the prices get?
Yep. Yeah. It says.
That's weird.
So, Kingdom Rush Origins came out.
For some reason doesn't stand out to me as much as it used to. So now I get confused which ones I already have.
Here it is. Vainglory for iPhone 6, iPhone age 9 plus, Super Evil Megacore offers in-app purchases, get. Just get. Says get.
It's just stupid.
It's really dumb. So I don't think that's going to do anything to stem the tide of the freemium revolution.
They did, at the end of that South Park episode, have live action South Park, which has been spoiled to everyone. And if you look at the set they used and the setup they used, they had a DK2, but they also had a Leap Motion attached to the front of DK2. Which
so you can see their hands?
I thought was they did their homework.
We've seen of
creating a
believable,
a somewhat believable for the people who scrutinize that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They did have the camera, everything. The camera was set in a low position, not recommended. You want to set it high up, ideally a tripod. But those are, you know, these are middle.
Are you
middle school kids? Yeah. Yes.
Do you think that they get people? Do you think? Okay, I'm reasonably sure that DJI didn't know they were doing the Phantom episode.
They did not know
beforehand. But do you think that they're getting demos? You think somebody brings an Oculus in and says, hey, here's how this works, so you can know how to make fun of it most effectively?
I think they have plenty of nerds who work there.
It's probably true. And they probably have nerds with money, so they're buying everything exactly. when it comes out, and it exactly. just works itself out.
Yeah.
By the way, if you haven't seen the documentary, 6 Days to Air.
Oh, it's so good.
It's really good. I mean, it's, you know, takes a week to make one of those cartoons.
It's about, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like the turn rate on an episode of Simpsons or Futurama or King of the Hill, or I'm sure some of those other shows that I don't watch, like Simpsons before they went digital was 13 months. So they would write a script, record dialogue, send it to Korea, and it would come back 13 months later.
You're kidding.
No. They could rush it for things like Treehouse of Horror and stuff like that sometimes.
But rush it probably didn't mean 6 days.
Rush it did not mean 6 days.
Yeah.
So they've always rendered South Park on computers. So even though it always looks like crappy cardboard animation, from the very beginning, they had this incredible cluster of SGI Erics machines.
From the beginning?
Yeah, not Spirit of Christmas, but from... I think every episode after the pilot, they had they were rendering on SGI machines, and then they switched over to other stuff as time went on. But yeah, always a very short period of time. The 6 days to Air is about the Human Centipede episode.
Yes,
which is it's a really awesome documentary. It's a good call, Jeremy. Should we talk about Toyota and hydrogen cars?
Sure. Or
do you want to talk about something else?
I want to know about hydrogen cars.
So hydrogen cars are cars powered by hydrogen. They expel water.
And where do I fuel these?
You have to go to a hydrogen fueling station, of which there are not very many.
No.
But if you think about it, a few years ago, there weren't very many electrical vehicle charging stations. And now you can drive across the country and charge your vehicle there.
Okay.
So.
Chicken and egg.
Toyota rolled out the Mirai. M-I-R-A-I, I assume is how you pronounce it. They brought it out at the Los Angeles Auto Show, I think, last week. It's their hydrogen fuel cell car. It goes 300 miles on one compressed hydrogen tank. The benefit it has over electricity is...
300 miles.
300 miles. The benefit it has over electrical cars is that the recycle time is as low as filling a tank with gas, mm-hmm. compressed gas.
Yeah.
So it's you know, akin to filling up your gas tank with air rather than like charging a Tesla, which even to just do the quick charge, it still takes 20 or 30 minutes.
And what are the emissions?
The emissions are water vapor.
I see.
So steam,
yeah.
I presume. And I guess you can collect that. I don't know.
And the fuel costs the same as gasoline?
It's right now, if you want to buy compressed hydrogen, I think it's probably pretty expensive. But my hunch is that they're going to subsidize it. I mean, the thing is, it's easy to make hydrogen, right? It's all you do is take water and add electricity and you get hydrogen and oxygen. And then you separate those out. Mm-hmm. If you read The Martian, you know how this works. You can also make it from hydrazine. That's not recommended, especially if you're in a confined area and have no way to control the burn. But, you know, it's easy to make and it doesn't. It's no emission, essentially. So presumably these cars will have like the California no emission standards, which means you'll be able to go across the bridges and use carpool lanes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that was neat.
And there's no danger of having a big Zeppelin in my truck.
Oh, I'm sure it's like if something pierces the hydrogen tank, I'm sure, you know, it's and that. There's a spark.
Yeah.
It goes boom.
Okay.
Don't Google just Mirai. You have to Google Toyota Mirai.
What's Mirai?
Some anime stuff.
Oh.
It looks futuristic.
It looks kind of like a concept car, but they're
looks absolutely like a concept car.
Presumably, they're saying they're going to sell hydrogen fuel cell cars in the next year. Toyota will in limited numbers, probably mostly in California.
It has such an aggressive design, except like other electric or, you know, Toyota cars and like the Prius, the wheels are tiny.
Fuel efficiency.
Super tiny.
Yeah, those BMW i3 wheels are look like spare tires. They're tiny.
Yeah. Wow. Honda has a fuel cell car as well coming, but it was delayed until late 2015, presumably. So,
So are they hoping to have universal gas pumps?
I think
that'll work on all brands.
I that is a really good question. Right now, we don't have that for electric cars, so I don't know. Like, I think that that's the kind of stuff that has to get worked out in order for this to succeed.
Yeah.
My guess is that they'll start selling this in San Francisco or LA or San Diego and roll out like three gas stations essentially for the short term.
Yeah.
Presumably you could load a bunch of those tanks in the back of the car though and just keep swapping them out.
I suppose so.
Right? Why not? It's like, I mean, compressed gas tanks are heavy and unwieldy, though. So I don't know how much volume.
Rolling it out?
Yeah. Like, do you have to get a forklift to drop this thing in? Do you plug it into some sort of cylinder? Like, when I go get propane at the propane place and he hooks it up to the big tank, that's scary every single time. I don't think I want to do that.
No.
I'm not sure.
It'd be called a comm gas station.
Oh, that's terrible.
We got to separate it somehow.
Parrot Bebop release info is out. When is this thing available? We saw this a few months ago.
Parrot Bebop, the new drone quad.
The new quadcopter from Parrot, makers of the AR drone, which is just a quadcopter.
It was like the first popular mass market drone.
Yes, absolutely. The one that was $300 sold in Brookstone.
Yeah.
And this one, the Bebop, comes out next month. $500 is the starting price, but does not have their fancy transmitter. And that one, I believe, raises it another couple $100.
So it doesn't still use the iPhone? Because the AR drone used the iPhone.
So I think you use the iPhone if you...
if you don't buy the remote.
I see. Okay.
But the remote, the transmitter, costs more money.
And the transmitter had HDMI out or something, right? So they, when we saw the demo, they had an Oculus plugged into it, and it looked okay.
I do not believe that they'll have an Oculus support on launch. That would be really interesting. We are definitely getting one in to test, though.
That would be interesting.
We also, I don't think we talked about it last week because it happened after we recorded the podcast, but DJI announced their new quad last week, too. Did we talk about that
last week?
We did talk about that.
We did?
Yeah. Talked about how it looked like a Raptor.
Oh, right. But we hadn't flown it yet.
Right.
Well, we still haven't flown it. But I
flew it.
Really? When did you fly it? On Sunday?
On Sunday.
Oh.
I didn't get to fly it. It's aggressive. It's
a hot flyer?
It has a lot of power.
He said that they got it up to 60, 70 miles an hour.
I didn't fly it speed-wise, but just in terms of how responsive it is and how much lift it gets.
You never flew the X8, did you?
Did not fly the X8.
Okay, so the X8, when you kind of bumped the sticks, it had a much more aggressive response than the Phantom 2 does. Like I almost accidentally crashed into a tree 80 feet above my head when I first test flew the X8. Hmm. Kind of giving it the juice like you would with the Phantom, so... Model X is delayed until 2015.
The Tesla.
The Tesla.
Yep.
Speaking of future cars.
Yeah, and Norm is saying, he's relaying some rumors that they might be getting rid of those beautiful Falcon Wing doors.
I think Elon has said they're not, but that's the speculation.
Elon said, no, it's all good. Yeah. Okay, good.
Well, so the Falcon Wing doors from a manufacturing perspective are a real challenge.
I would think so. I think they probably have a lot of challenges over there.
Yeah. But I mean, the car I think is going to be more or less the same chassis as a Model S, just with a different body on it, and then figuring out how to get the doors on, because I think the doors are usually one of the last things that goes on a car. But that seems like it would be tough and probably something they'd have to build custom machinery and shit for. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
I think their next one, because the Model X is going to cost the same as a Model S. It's going to be a certain market for that car.
Remember, my wife would rather have a Model X than a Model S if we were buying a $100,000 car.
I suppose I would too.
Yeah.
But I think their next one, the Model 3, is going to be the one that's going to really sell. And they're going to have to work to keep up with demand for that one.
A consumer-priced Tesla is going to light the world on fire. A mass-market-priced Tesla.
And I don't think that's going to mean that they're not going to do another revision to the S. They might not do a body change, but like they have.
Well, they've already done the D.
The D.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they'll have the S, the D, the S, the X, and the 3, and then iterate on those.
Yeah. Autopilot.
Hmm.
They actually announced a battery upgrade for the Roadster. So you can double your range now.
Oh, that's great. And it's probably getting to be about the time that Roadster owners are thinking about the battery life cycle reaching the end anyway.
Yeah.
So
this isn't just a replacement. It's a new generation battery.
So they take the old battery out and they put a current gen battery in. That's awesome.
Yeah.
HBO Go, is it out yet? Or is it just coming?
Out.
So have you used it yet?
I have not. I just read this today.
What do you mean?
HBO Go for Xbox One.
Only a year. It only took a year. So there was no HBO Go app for the Xbox One at launch.
I thought you meant I could get HBO Go without a cable subscription.
No, that's next year.
Okay.
I hope that it's better than the Plex app for Xbox One, because the Plex app for Xbox One is kind of a stinker. You can't stream directly from the app on your phone or your tablet to the Xbox One Plex app, even if it's already running. And it doesn't do things like keep track, like show you the things that you've most recently watched. So you can't like pause something, turn off the Xbox, come back to it later, and then resume what you were watching, which seems like oversights to me. What's going on with Mad.com?
This is the best thing I've read in the past week.
Hold on, is this the grilled octopus thing?
We
talked about this months ago.
No.
Yeah.
This story only came out last week. Or no, I guess it was from July.
Yeah, we talked about it in July because Bezos said, "Why you're the grilled octopus? That's why I bought
breakfast
you.
Octopus.
Breakfast octopus, whatever.
It's the still
I
the
don't
best
understand
thing.
The grilled octopus.
I'm gonna read the story.
Okay.
Meta.com is the new. It's basically a lot like Woot, and it's founded by the guy who founded Woot, and
Woot was bought by Amazon.
Woot was bought by Amazon, and the guy who founded Woot recollects the meeting he had with Jeff Bezos.
This is before or after the purchase?
Immediately after the purchase, he was flown up to Seattle from Texas, I believe, just to have breakfast with Bezos. And he asked him, why did you buy Woot? And then, I'm going to read this. This is from D Magazine. So you should, it's from Dallas, Dallas, Texas Magazine. So you should read the whole story, but I'm going to read a specific quote. And Bezos finally spoke. He looked down at his plate. Bezos had ordered a dish called Tom's Big Breakfast, a preparation of Mediterranean octopus that includes potatoes, bacon, green garlic yogurt, and a poached egg. He goes, you're the octopus that I'm having for breakfast. When I look at the menu, you're the thing I don't understand, the thing I've never had. I must have the breakfast octopus.
Jesus. And then he held his pinky up to his hand and said, $1 billion.
I must have the breakfast octopus. That's got to be on someone's like
breakfast octopus was a running joke for a while around in certain circles. I think that's it for news. Anything else?
Some game releases.
This has been a really buggy ass year.
Buggy
for game releases.
Yeah.
Xbox, Unity, Assassin's Creed Unity.
You said unplayable.
There's been some patches.
Okay.
It is slightly more playable. Occasionally still all the faces fall off the people though. So you're left with like eyeballs and teeth. It's terrifying.
Maybe that's just a glitch in the Matrix.
It could be. I mean, we went too many layers. Like I did read that Jaden and Willow Smith interview. So we could just be one extra layer down the holographic universe. And that could be, that's, if you want to read something terrifying, read that. Those kids are scary as hell. The Halo Master Chief Collection seemingly just doesn't work. Somebody told me that it took too long to load the disc sometimes, so that then it will just not, it'll, the Xbox will think it's hung and just kill the process. So then you like actually can't launch it. Matchmaking works sometimes, doesn't work sometimes. They've had like six patches or something. It's fairly ridiculous. Gina and I were playing Little Big Planet 3 last night, which is a low profile, first party release for the PlayStation 4. That game is buggy as shit too.
Really?
Yeah, like we're walking along and all of a sudden she just drops through the universe. Like falls out of the game.
Oh boy.
Disappears. Yeah. Like the puzzles lock up and you can't get back in and except for killing yourself and restarting.
I launched Far Cry 4.
Okay.
And wouldn't load for me. Got a big black screen.
Did you have a current drivers?
Yes, I had upgraded everything and I texted you. I said, "Does it work for you?" You said, "Yes."
And then I went and played the game.
And I was very upset.
Yeah, did it end up working for you?
After I unplugged my joystick.
Your hotass.
That's what I had to do.
You had to get rid of the hot ass.
Yep. So,
and how's Far Cry 4?
I consider that a bug.
It's just like Far Cry 3 so far.
All the ads make it look like so much fun.
It is.
There
I mean,
a ton of ads.
Well, the intro that they released as basically a trailer, the first scene of the game, makes it look fantastic. But that character, that evil character, he just vanishes for at least the first hour that I've played.
You don't want to have too much of him.
Is it a big co-op game? Like, can't you play the whole game co-op?
You can play co-op. We should play co-op, Jeremy.
Isn't it just like running around and riding elephants and,
You have to kill elephants, probably. You have to unlock riding elephants.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did. I was time for that. Like, I didn't put a second into getting a bow or anything like that. I was like, elephant riding.
Right, it's because it's on the cover of the game.
Why would you not ride an elephant if you have the choice?
Why do we cut to talk about the FAA?
Because I forgot what the story was.
The big story. This was the
model airplane falls under the same rules as the drone story.
Yes, recently overturned.
Wait, model airplanes that people have been building for 30 years?
Yes.
Not flying model airplanes.
A federal court appeal now has overturned the original decision and says that the FAA has jurisdiction.
What was
over
the original
decision, which was based on a lawsuit against FAA versus a FPV quad flyer who flew at the University of Virginia and was fined $10,000.
He was flying commercially.
He was paid to do it, correct. Mm-hmm. But the decision was that the FAA could not fine him because what he was flying, a model aircraft, RC quadcopter, did not fall under the jurisdiction of the FAA because it's not aircraft. It's not a flying plane. As traditional, as aircraft as we define, as we understand it, something you ride. But in federal court, that has now been overturned. And so FAA does have jurisdiction not only over that, but it's pretty broad. Anything that, a Frisbee, above certain feet, of course.
Okay.
500 feet.
What about like a rocket?
I think
model rockets probably count. Yeah. Most of them don't go that high, though. 500 feet is pretty high for a model rocket, like for like what we flew in elementary school.
Paper airplanes and toys are considered aircraft, subject to the same regulations as 747s.
So it seems like those foam core planes that the Brooklyn Aerodynamics guys were flying at Maker Faire two or three years ago fall into the same category as a 747. That is absolutely ludicrous.
If a paper airplane falls under the category, everything does.
Well, I mean, okay, so on one hand, I see both sides of this, because on one hand, even the smallest quad, if you flew it into the flight path of a major airport, could kill a shitload of people.
About 500 feet or even recklessly. Yeah, recklessly.
Yeah.
Anything can be treated recklessly.
Yeah, 150 feet over the approach for SFO or LaGuardia or O'Hare or something like that could be an absolute massive human tragedy.
But whether the FAA can have jurisdiction over that as opposed to just saying nothing can fly in those zones.
Well, that is the question.
Why do they control the airspace outside those zones?
Because they're in charge of the air. That's their mandate.
Well, there are babies in strollers all over the place that you don't want to run into.
But that's not the FAA's jurisdiction.
Even a paper airplane.
You're saying...
I'm saying worst case scenario, there's people everywhere that could be harmed by these things.
Paper airplanes are a constant threat.
Like, if I'm on top of a...
Somebody arrest John Collins right now.
I guess, what's 500 feet? Is that 50 stories?
500 feet is like 40 stories because it's like 12 or 14 feet a story.
So if I was at the top of a 40-story building, which admittedly is a very high building, and threw a paper airplane off the roof.
Why do you keep saying 500 feet?
Because that's the 400 limit. Feet is the...
So wait, under 400 feet, anything goes?
I believe correct.
It's the Wild West.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes.
I'm not too concerned about 400 feet is tall. I mean, I rarely go above 400 feet with my Phantom.
No, I'm sorry. 500 feet is the definition of reckless, is when they can start going after you.
Okay, but I'm sure that it's quite possible the UVA guy wasn't above 500 feet.
Is that 500 feet above ground level, or is that 500 feet above...
I believe...
It has to be above ground level. But like, when I fly in my house, I never get anywhere near 500 feet, because I fly up the side of a hill, and usually I'm like 30 feet. I'm practically mowing the grass. Right.
But their jurisdiction is... They won't go after you if you throw a Frisbee under that, but they still have jurisdiction under this ruling.
They still have jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's
laws.
It's messed up.
Oh. Let's play some music and talk about what we've been testing. We've got some good stuff this week. Hey, Norm. What's that shiny thing on your wrist?
It's a new smartwatch.
A smarch?
It's a new smartwatch. It's the...
Which smarch is it?
Zen Watch. I skipped over getting the Moto 360 because when I saw it in person, I thought it was too bulky regardless of its... near circular screen, LCD screen.
Because the Moto 360 is both round and huge, and then also fairly thick.
It is very too thick.
Yeah.
Was my complaint. And even though I did like the LGG watch and I've been using it for a while, the strap did broke, and ergonomically that watch was not great for me. This is, I think it's a lot so far. It's still, if you lay it down on the table, it's pretty thick, but it's curved on top. It curves, the bezel curves gently.
It looks a little Apple Watchy, frankly.
You know,
it's like, it's got that same kind of capsule shape. I bet the Apple Watch has
a, yeah, you know, curved corners. Apple Watch, probably smaller bezel. But this is a 320 by 320 OLED screen.
Okay.
And I've been seeing how that works, the OLED and that resolution.
You've had
and
it has for, some,
I've had it for a day.
So previously the smartwatch, the smart shoe had was a LCD screen?
Yes, LCD.
The battery's almost out.
Yeah, I haven't charged it since yesterday. So I'll see if I can go
how
for
do you charge
24
it?
Hours. It has a docking port. It's not capacitive. It's just like it's...
Inductive, you mean?
It's
not inductive.
It is inductive.
No.
It's like a Sonicare.
Wait. There are contact points.
Okay.
There are contact points.
So there's not inductive then?
Not inductive and not magnetic. So it's just like a pressure fit.
Okay.
But I like the design so far.
It's good looking.
Yeah.
You guys both tested out a fairly ludicrous... I like that band, actually. The leather band with the clasp. That's mm-hmm. novel. You tested out a fairly ridiculous product called the Boosted Skateboard. I saw one of these on the street the other day.
Boosted Board.
Oh.
I've seen two in San Francisco.
You knew more about this than we did because you followed their Kickstarter. The Kickstarter, which was completed last year, sold a two-motor skateboard, electric skateboard, for about a little over $1,000. And after the Kickstarter was a success, they started selling these for about $1,800, which... a lot of money for a skateboard. But just a couple weeks ago, they revamped their lineup and now have three different models. They have a single motor.
That's a lot of
a
models.
A two motor, which is the equivalent of their Kickstarter one, or very close. And then the Boosted Plus, 2 Plus, which is better motors. And when I say two motors, it's not for front and back. It's two motors for just the back, rear two wheels, but a motor for each wheel.
So it's always... so. When you have the one motor one, does it have like a linkage or something that makes it turn both wheels, or does it only turn one wheel?
I think it's just one wheel.
So you can spin out.
Yeah, they actually warn about that. Yeah.
How? So this is not at all like that one wheel thing that I tried at Maker Faire this year,
which is called one wheel.
Yeah.
So it's not the Segway for skateboards. You're not supposed to balance on it.
It's not a novel design.
It's designed like a longboard, which is it's good. I think it's better than the one wheel in the sense that it's made for people who have familiarity with either skateboards or longboards, which a lot of people do. But it's motorized. Obviously, there are some trade-offs. It's a little more friction than a longboard.
It has regenerative braking. So
it does have regenerative braking.
Oh, it does.
So it's constantly, there's a little bit of friction when you go mm-hmm. forward.
On the power levels, the motor can be a little jarring when you activate the motor. There are four speed levels, but the maximum speed can go up to 22 miles per hour, which is ridiculous for a skateboard that you're not strapped into.
Is the idea that you use it like a normal skateboard and then just use the motor when you need a little boost, or are you just always using the motor?
That's part of the testing. I gave it to my housemate, who is a very proficient longboarder, and saw if he could skate with it as... just using the motor, skate with it without using the motor at all, or a combination switching between uphill and straightaways.
It seems to me like the ideal is let gravity do the work when you're going down a slope.
Yes.
Maybe use the motors to help control your speed when you're coming down a steep hill.
Which you can.
And then...
they don't recommend you reverse or like brake hard, though.
Yeah, that would seems like it would be a bad idea.
Bad for the motor.
But then use it to go uphill so you don't have to kick so much.
Yeah. I have not had much skateboarding or longboarding experience, but this is so much fun. And just the 2 hours I spent learning how to longboard on a flat surface at a park has made me want to use this a lot.
Have you tried just a normal longboard?
Yes, and I don't like normal longboards because I can't balance.
This doesn't seem like a good solution for if you can't balance on a normal longboard.
I rode it for 10 minutes, and it's a world of difference because you don't have to put your foot on the ground.
Exactly.
Your feet are always planted as they would be on a snowboard. Yep. And so you can get your balance and then maintain it.
Oh.
And now all of your momentum is controlled by the motors, and so you're just sort of gliding on the ground.
Yeah. And all you do is bend your knees and lean back and forth.
Your center of gravity never changes.
Exactly. And so whereas a skateboard... when you're lifting your feet off, that's the toughest part of a skateboard. And
yeah.
Anyone learning a skateboard knows is you're shifting your balance constantly between turning and propelling.
Right.
And taking the whole propelling element out of it completely.
Which is cool once you get past the learning curve, I yes. suppose. But I'm not, I don't know how to skateboard. And I felt very much more comfortable on this booster board than I do on a skateboard.
Yeah. I was very proud. I was able to skate home, never stepping my foot off of the board at all.
It's eerie seeing somebody ride one of these and like pull up to a stoplight, not put their foot on the ground, and then just take off again without putting their foot on the ground. And the dude just had his hand in his pocket, so you couldn't tell he had the remote. So the thing we should mention is you control the speed with the remote. The remote you can hold in either hand. It's ambidextrous. And like pushing up makes you go forward. Pulling back makes you go back. I presume if you're going like on gravity, pulling back a little bit makes it slow down some?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it has a 6-mile range.
That's pretty good. Is that at full speed or is that at a normal speed or does it matter?
It doesn't matter because
I guess the amount of power used is the same. Distance. So you don't stop and start a ton.
Correct.
Huh. So they call it, you know, one of these last mile vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be awesome if you rode Bart to our office and didn't want to walk the 3/4 mile through the gauntlet of poo to get here.
Or if you live in, you know, suburbia and you have wide streets and maybe not, you can maneuver around cars, not a ton of traffic.
I could ride that to Denny's.
You could totally ride to Denny's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing is, it's not cheap. You know, $1,300 for the dual motor, which you want.
Yeah, if you were to get one, the dual motor seems like the one to get.
Or $1,500 for the dual motor plus, which gives you 22 instead of 20 miles an hour, and it can go up steeper hills.
I mean,
you could get a scooter for an electric scooter for half that,
or a bike.
Or
for
a bike. If you wanted to use your muscles, you could get a bike.
Yeah,
a skateboard for $100.
I mean, I think that this is one of those things that as it becomes popular. You know, economies of scale will kick in and the price will come down and pretty soon you'll be able to buy a normal skateboard for $50 or this for $200, right? What kind of motors do they use for this? Could you tell?
They prototype them using hobby shop off-the-shelf motors.
So these are just like they're not steppers, right?
No, they're motors.
They're just electric motors.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they're straight up DC.
And motors. Is there a drive chain? There's like a little belt on it, right?
There's a belt.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It seemed pretty neat.
Are you planning to try it?
I would like to, yeah.
I mean, I got to tell you, I have never felt this before. I mean, it was really serene. It was like, I mean, the closest thing to a hoverboard I expect to experience until I get the hoverboard.
Well, I'll take
until
it.
Until you get the, yeah. Until you know you're going to get the hoverboard.
I'll take it down to the boardwalk in Pacifica and go from Taco Bell up over the Segway route, which goes up a really steep hill and then down some terrifying switchbacks. And I'll strap a GoPro on my head.
Please get yourself a helmet.
I got to get a helmet before I do that.
I bought myself a helmet before I did.
Did you get wrist guards too?
No.
You should get wrist guards.
I don't.
You eat shit, you're going to need the wrist guards.
By the way, Norm mentioned there's 4 power levels to the thing.
Oh, wow.
Level 4? I don't know who's accelerating that fast and staying on the board.
So is it about top? Is the power level determined top speed or acceleration?
Both.
Well, it just kicks it in. It's just like constant current. And then once you hit that top speed, you're there. My son was lucky enough to come along and, you know, check it out with me when Norm had it out. And he sat on it. And we launched him off.
I saw the video of this. I've never seen joy in a child's eyes like in his eyes.
I mean, it was like roller coaster grin. He loved it.
He was all in. He's kind of an adventurous kid, though.
Yes.
I got a GE Link bulb. This is their Zigbee smart light bulb. So you can hook it up to your smart things or Link or Wink or any of the Zigbee compatible home controllers. And it's just a light bulb. So you can plug it in someplace you can't put a controllable switch. Or maybe if you have a lamp that you don't want to put a controlled receptacle or something in, you can do that.
Like the Hue?
It works just like the Hue, but because it's Zigbee in the bulb, you don't need the Hue comes with a hub. So in order to use the Hue, you have to have their smart hub.
Oh,
this lets you work without. I mean, you provide your own hub. So the Hue will work with smart things, but you still have to have the hub. The Link works directly with your Zigbee compatible devices, and you get full. So the Link isn't a multicolor bulb. It's only, I think it has color. It's a color temperature. The color temperature is fixed, and you can dim. Gotcha. If you want remote.
And when you say hub, you don't mean like an access point. You mean
a smart home hub. Yeah, okay. So smart things, we talked about it, I think, 1 week when you weren't here. But basically, it is a Zigbee and Z-Wave controller and provides an interface for your home to the internet to control all of your remote stuff. I think that's it for what we're testing. We're close to out of time here, so
I want to say I meant to say last week I like Inbox. You guys don't like Inbox. I want to give it a thumbs up. The new Google email client for you know, invite only for phones.
I'm holding judgment until I can hook my work email up to it.
Okay, yeah,
because it doesn't work for
enough.
Google Apps for your domain right
but
now.
But I plow through my email like I never have. It's just super fast the way it sorts it into the different categories. I can just check the subjects, make sure there's no false positives. One click and they're all archived.
That's
like
nice.
It's fun.
Yeah, the one click archive for an entire folder is wonderful.
Yeah,
I wish everything did that.
Yeah,
my problem was that you couldn't get granular enough with the notifications. So I need to have notifications when Norm, Adam, my boss, my wife, like there's like six people that I need to get notified when I get an email from, and the rest of them I just check normally.
Yeah.
The Apple VIP stuff lets me do that.
Oh.
The nobody else does that. Like none of the other mail clients I've ever used do that.
See, I don't use that VIP. I didn't know about that feature. And what I liked about Inbox was that I only get notifications when it's not spam. So
right.
Maybe these people would automatically be filtered into that category.
The problem with Inbox is that the Google filter isn't as smart. Like I'd rather just say these are the 10 people that I want to get notifications from.
Whitelisted.
Because every once in a while you get an ad for dick pills and that sneaks through the filter.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't want to know about this at 11 o'clock at night. It just makes me... Do you remember... Think back to like 1997, maybe 98.
All right, I'm there.
Okay. You probably had more hair, longer hair.
Quake 1.
Yeah, we were playing a lot of Quake 1. It was good times. Do you remember how exciting it used to be to get an email?
Yeah.
But
hasn't worn off.
Really?
It's Pavlovian. I mean, every time I get the ding, I
just
love
get
it.
Sad.
Even when I said it to myself.
Wow.
You know, it's, send yourself a reminder.
And it's immediate, followed by immediate disappointment. Oh, that was for myself.
I'm sorry it's worn off for you.
Email's just it's just stuff to do.
That's why the smartwatch is such a, it's like drugs. I get direct into the wrist. Straight to the wrist. That ding.
Last thing I'll say is that there have been a ton of awesome indie games come out on iOS in the last couple of weeks. If you haven't played 80 Days and you want to play a game that is an adventure game about traveling around the world and racism, 80 Days is great.
Oh, boy.
Sailor's Dream is the follow-up to Device 7 or whatever that game was. It's like an interactive story thing. And then Space Age finally came out, and it is glorious. It's everything. I played that in XO 2 or 3 years ago. And it's from the guy who made The Incident. Do you remember that game? It was one of the early iOS games. It's the
falling
you're
stuff.
In a column, and the stuff falls down on top of you. You have to stay on top of the pile.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the follow-up to that, and it is awesome.
Oh,
Norm remembers.
I remember The Incident.
That had a thing where you could use the phone as a controller for the iPad game.
That's just kept on jumping on top of everything's building up, right?
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes, the future is now. I'm going to play some music, and then we'll take a couple of questions and call it a show.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails, we do...
Emails?
No.
Questions.
Boom.
If you have a question for This Is Only Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Send us questions. I'm really grateful for the rain in San Francisco right now.
It is.
I don't know if you guys can hear that in the background. It is pouring, and it's hitting the skylights pretty hard.
Yeah, we don't get this.
No, we need it. We need it bad. First question comes from Jeff. He says, "Hey, Will, Norman, hopefully Chloe." Sorry, Jeremy. Question for Norm. I volunteer with a veteran and emergency responder-based disaster relief organization. We typically have a photographer such as myself on tap to beam images back to headquarters during an operation. I typically pack a Nikon D600 for photos and my Yoga with Photoshop CS6, both of which require a 110-watt outlet, which makes them logistically more difficult to keep powered in the field. Is there a mirrorless or DSLR camera that can charge entirely off of USB? And can RAW workflow be done entirely on mobile Adobe Lightroom app yet without a computer? My RX100 is my backup piece and is easy to keep powered in the field, but I'm looking around to see if any mirrorless or DSLR systems have the same ability. I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of image quality if that means a lighter pack or bringing more emergency gear." So I assume he's sending pictures back to like a get analysis and see how things are going, and also like to have stuff to put on the website to help raise money and raise awareness of disasters.
Most of the Sony mirrorless cameras now, the ones that are APS-C sensors, are only can charge over USB.
So you can charge and also you can get external batteries and bring 3 or 4 batteries too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But is that starts like mine doesn't charge off of USB, my 5R.
Yeah, it does.
I don't think so. Is it just real slow?
Real slow.
Okay.
Some of them don't even come with a charger anymore.
Really?
They only charge over USB.
Oh, that's so dumb. Next question comes from Chris. Chris says, hey guys, I would like a tablet, but I'm a very casual user. My needs generally consist of streaming Netflix while cooking, thumbing through the internet, and reading ebooks. I don't necessarily need a powerhouse of a tablet, but I don't want something that will be obsolete quickly. I've done some research and I've narrowed it down to the most recent Nexus 7 or the new 7-inch Kindle Fire HDX. I am an Amazon Prime subscriber, if that makes any difference. I probably wouldn't buy the Nexus 7 now just because it's a year and a half old. I also don't think I would buy the Kindle Fire HDX, but I mean,
NVIDIA Shield tablet.
The NVIDIA Shield tablet is really nice, actually. That's a good call. Has lollipop. It has
a stylus. Has Tegra, new Tegra.
It's stock Android-ish.
Ish.
Yeah, I mean, it's stock enough, I guess, is the way to do it. And you can plug it into your living room PC and make a TV and make it a media center if you want, because it has HDMI out.
And I believe they just launched Grid.
Grid, the
streaming service.
Oh, I don't know about that. And it has stereo speakers on the front, which brings us to our next question. Hey guys, I've been considering upgrading my aging iPad 3 Retina with something newer. The speaker seems to be getting extremely tinny, and I've never liked doing the palm cupping hold to hear videos. I might be paranoid, but it seems like the latest iOS patch is slowing everything down. My wife uses an iPad 3 Retina right now, and it did slow everything down. The iOS 8.1.1 or whatever, 8.1.2, whatever came out yesterday or day before, helps a ton. It's still not great. She's probably getting a new iPad for Christmas, if I had to guess. I like the idea of stereo speakers on the front, but so far the only well-reviewed tablets I've found with that layout is the NVIDIA Shield and the new Nexus 9. My phone is Android, so I'm not loyal to Apple, but at the time of buying the tablet, the Play Store was getting on its feet and the screen did look amazing. Anyway, I use my tablet daily for YouTube, web surfing, podcasts, and audiobooks, so the gaming features might be a waste for me. I do have a beefy PC that could stream to the Shield, but I figured if I'm in my house where I could stream, I'd just use the PC or connected TV. What do you think? I think he's a Shield customer, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like given that the Nexus 7 hasn't been updated, it seems like the winner on 7-inch Android tablets from what we've seen right now. Unless Norm has any other suggestion.
Nope. Okay. Get a halfway decent Bluetooth speaker.
Why is that?
Because you don't have to cup your palm to hear movies anymore.
Oh, you can't do that.
I mean, it's just a world better than any kind of built-in speaker.
Some of the Bluetooth speakers have latency problems when you're doing movies, though. They have, like, AV sync problems because they cache.
That's no good.
To avoid dropouts.
Yeah.
They almost all have line-ins, so you can always plug a wire in and avoid that entirely. Hmm. But
I've had good luck.
Yeah. There you go. You have a boom, right?
I have the... Is that what it's called?
The UE boom?
I have the Bose.
Oh, you have that thing.
The mini.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll do it for us this week. Jeremy Williams, you're at Jerware on Twitter. People can find you at ledsec.com.
Yep.
Very old fashioned. Norman Chan, what's coming up on Tested? What do we got?
We have stuff from our live show finally on the site.
That's true.
So if you go on set right now, you'll see the first public showing of Jamie's Racing Spiders, which is a talk he did at our live show leading up to coming in probably very early next year, a video series documenting the build, design, and build of those
Sorry. Spiders. My father FaceTimed me. I apologize.
Yes, sir.
You could have answered it.
I don't think that's a good idea. In fact, actually, I know for a fact that's not a good idea. Okay, so Racing Spiders. We have some audio problems with some of those files, but we were working on them. We might have a solution to help make the quality better. So
check out Jeremy Williams' talk.
Yeah, Jeremy Williams' talk is great.
Thanks.
They're all my favorite talks, but Jeremy's was really my favorite.
That's
don't
really
tell
sweet.
Anybody else.
Oh, thanks, Will. I shouldn't share the story because it sounds like I'm boasting, but for the first time ever, I was actually recognized in public.
Wow.
Because of the talk I did at the Castro.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
by
it was
yourself.
Very, very flattering. No, my wife was with me.
Oh, that makes that it all worthwhile then.
She was, you know, just glowing with awe of my
pride.
Pride. Just in how amazing I was.
We should take you to PAX next year.
Why?
We'll bring you down.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
What do they say?
It was a nice guy. His name was Kevin. He's one of your watchers. And he just said, hey, are you Jeremy Williams? I saw you talk at Castro at the Tested Live show.
Awesome.
Yeah. So thanks for enabling that, fellas.
Keep out there if you see Jeremy in the street, especially if he's with his wife.
He loves
say hi.
He loves a fist bump. Jeremy's a bumper.
Give him a... give him credit for something that maybe he didn't actually do, and just impress.
That sounds like something that might happen to you.
Give me credit for something I didn't even do?
Yeah. Then
Norm probably did it.
You were telling me some stories. People recognized you recently.
Oh, and recognized me incorrectly. Yes. Yes. Oh, that was funny.
So that'll do it for us this week. We will see you guys next week on... Actually, we probably won't. We don't know if we're going to see it. So next week, Thursday, is Thanksgiving in the U.S. We may or may not have a show next week. It's kind of up in the air right now, but we'll keep you posted. It will probably be something short and maybe a little special if we do have a show.
Happy holidays.
Do some live play stuff. Let's play stuff.
That's not a terrible idea. I'm spatchcocking a turkey. Are you here for Thanksgiving, Jeremy?
No, I'm heading out.
Going out of town. Heading to Chicago?
No, I'm going to Virginia.
Ooh. Norm, you're here, of course.
I am here.
With the fam. We will see you all next time we see you. Have a good Thanksgiving weekend if you're in the U.S. And we will play the outro, which comes from... I hesitate to even say this. Today's outro is brought to you by Fart Blossom 69. So thanks, Fart Blossom 69.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Fart Blossom 69.
Probably wouldn't take it.
That was actually brought to you by Electrics. It was about Fart Blossom 69.
Jeez, I thought those were some recursive inception.
When did we say Fart Blossom 69 that many times? Must have been in a question section.
Oh boy.
Don't recall.
Bye.